All right, Ray, let me show you what I am actually dealing with right now at my car dealership. This is an actual picture taken yesterday from my car dealership. And what do you notice about this picture right here?
There's no cars at your car dealership.
There are no cars.
Maybe yours is just a parking lot today.
It's, you know what? If there was a parking lot, I mean, there'd be customers there. So it's not even that. We don't have any cars sitting on our car dealership right now. I won't say any. We have like 20 for sale.
Yeah.
But typically during this time, we'll have 40 to 50 cars that are actually for sale. And I know what you would be saying is that, well, Brandon, you're knocking the cover off the ball. You're selling a bunch of cars, but it's actually not the case. Last month, we just did a little bit better than break even at my car dealership. So, I mean, it's weird because we're going to these auctions and we're selling just a little bit more than we're actually able to buy. So we can sell 12, 13 cars in a week, but we might only be buying 10 cars in a week. So we're not going forward with what we're actually doing. And at that 12 or 13 cars, we're just breaking even for the week. So we could be having the situation where, yeah, my car lot can look like this because we're selling more cars than we're buying. But at the end of the day, I'm still not making any money. And this is my fear, because think about the next 5-6 months, I got to start loading up for tax time. I got a 100 car deficit right now of what I need to have come around this time next. In spring selling season, I don't know how I'm going to get there.
Well, you know, obviously you go to the sales. What are you seeing at the sales these days? And when we say sales, we're talking about the wholesale auctions. Has there been just no cars being offered, or are the cars so bad that you don't want to bid on?
So at the beginning of summer, we were actually able to load up just a little bit. Because we had this pull forward in demand from a lot of people buying cars to get ahead of the tariffs, that created more trade-ins that put more cars at the auction. But then towards the middle of summer, it's like the spigot just turned off. And so we were able to have a lot of cars. Then I was able to show a lot of videos of us being stacked three deep, and that was rare for us. But then also we weren't able to sell very many cars through at that point too. But then it's like all the auction cars started to go away, and the amount of vehicles that were going to the auction was going down. But we have even another element of problem for me and my niche, is that people who are driving the kind of cars that I buy, I pointed out one this morning, I was doing a video. It's like a 2001 Lexus ES300 that's got 175,000 miles. People who are driving those kind of cars, that's a paid off for car.
Sure.
The person who's driving that car, they're not going and buying a brand new car and adding a $700 to $800 car payment. They just can't afford it. So those types of cars, they're actually good, that a person would want to upgrade to a new car. Those aren't coming to the auction. The only ones that I'm able to see at auction right now that are in my price range for my customer are the ones where people had to trade them in because they were dying or they were already dead. And as opposed to what it has traditionally been in the car market, where, okay, someone would buy a car, they'd drive it for 5-6 years, and you know what? I'm ready for a new one. So let's just trade up. Even if it was one of those old Lexus ES300s that they bought secondhand, well, they would still trade that car in for a new car when they're ready to upgrade. But they're just not doing it anymore. They're holding on to their cars longer. So I'm getting hit in two different ways, where cars are coming down at auction because new car franchises just aren't trading for cars and the same kind of velocity that they were. But also the types of cars that are being traded in for my price range, those people are keeping the cars. So they're not making their way to auction either.
So what kind of cars are you seeing at the auctions at the moment? Are they not nearly as old of vehicles as you would normally expect to see? And what I mean by that is maybe they're 2010 on up, as opposed to some from the early 2000s. Is that what you're seeing to a degree?
I would think for the majority of the time that I've actually been in business, obviously that mid-tier of car, that car that's 5 to 10 years old, that's going to be the majority of cars that show up at these auctions anyway. Mm-hmm. What I will say is just across the board, the quality has come down. It's just because of how much everything's cost. And then we take in just to the account of people having to fix things, that even costs more. So people are opting to even not fix minor problems anymore on these cars. But I will say that it is skewing more towards that middle range than it had been, just because the people that are trading the cars that I have, they're just not trading them in. I will say that we're getting more repos into the system, which would lead itself to be more cars in the range that I buy. The problem with repos, though, is that, like, even me, like, yeah, one out of every 10 repos that we're going to check, we're going to buy, because the quality of a repo is even, it's way worse than what a new car trade-in would be. And I mean, I would guess one out of every probably 25 to 30 cars that we buy at auction is going to be a repo. So we tend to stay away from those cars.
You know, you said something very interesting, at least to me, a moment ago. And you said, you know, the cost of repairing vehicles has gone up. And so, you know, even minor things people are having difficulty taking care of today, which leads me to want to ask you a question. Have you seen the cost of the repairs that you normally have to do to the cars that you buy? Has the cost of the reconditioning work that you do, has that gone up dramatically in the last several months? Have you noticed an increase in the cost there?
In the last 3 years, it's gone up dramatically. And now the last several months, I haven't seen anything go up crazy, man. I think you're trying to factor in like tariffs and parts. If that's
gonna... I was curious as to whether or not that's impacting anything at the moment.
Yeah, and that I haven't really noticed. The problems that we have been seeing is because the quality of the cars that we've had to buy has gone down in the last 3 years, just because the trade-ins haven't been there. We're having to fix more stuff.
Yeah.
On top of that, with labor and just the cost of parts over the last 3 years going up as much as they have. Things like transmissions, is I put this in a video the other day, is something that is very obvious to us, because we used to be able to buy like used transmissions, get them put in, have a 6 month to 12 month parts and labor warranty on these things, and do it for like $1,200 to $1,800 on the kind of cars that we buy. And lately, transmissions have been running us like $2,500 to $3,500. So that's how much more. So it's eating into the kinds of cars that we could buy, or even if we're deciding what we're going to do, the cars that come in and we miss on a car. We messed up. We bought a car with a bad transmission. We mess up sometimes. Sometimes we get some that are like that and we have to fix them before we can sell them. And then we have to go in and say, okay, this is a $2,500 car. We can sell it for $3,500. We have 25 in it, but it's going to cost us $2,500 to put in a transmission. We're going to have $5,000 in this car. We're going to lose $1,500, but if we take it to auction and dump it right now as it is with the transmission bad, we're probably going to sell it for $700-$800. So we're right on the line of, okay, should we even fix the car or not? We're having to have a lot more of these discussions. And 3 years ago, it would have been, okay, transmission is $1,200 or $1,800, whatever, just fix it. We don't even have to talk about it. That's cheap enough where we can probably break even when we have this put into it. And that's not the case now. And a lot of our big time losses that we're experiencing right now is because of transmissions or motors.
So if I hear you correctly, it seems as if on many of the cars, the repairs can be so costly from your perspective that it actually prices them out of your customer's range, so that what you thought you were buying that would fit into the budgets that your customers have are now, once they're ready for retail, well above what your customer's spending budget would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, I mean, so we have to figure out this issue of not having cars. And in my mind, I would love to hear what you have to say about this, but in my mind, I feel like I just have to go to more auctions, because a couple of years ago when we didn't have available cars, we had to spend more money and I had to actually increase what I was selling cars for. So we had one tax time where we just completely missed. I had like a $9,500 Hummer sitting on my car lot where I sell. Then it was the year before, I was selling cars for $3,500. It felt yucky. And I would have customers come in and be like, hey, you're my spot. I got my tax refund check. What you got for $2,500? Like, I can't help you, bro. Not this year. I mean, everything's cost so much more. And we're able to sell through a lot of our cars, but we broke even on a lot of that high money stuff. And it took us months instead of weeks to sell through at tax time. And this year, like, I've got what, 5 months that I've got to deal with this 100 car deficit. And at this point, I'm not really sure what I've got to do, because all along these 5 months, I still have to sell cars to cover expenses. And I don't want to just break even. I would love to make some money, but it might not be the case. But I've never had to dig myself out of a 100 car deficit in this short amount of time. So I'm really not sure what I'm going
to
do.
Well, it would seem to me, somebody once said, I don't know who it was, but you can't sell from an empty shelf. You got to have something. So does that mean, I would think it would mean that you have to go to auctions that might be further away, auctions that you haven't gone to in years. You might have to look at some slightly different cars. And if you would normally be trying to buy 60 or 70 used cars in a month, so for the next 5 months, you need to make that number 80 or 90. You know, the possibility exists that you're going to be buying some mistakes, but
no, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause every car you buy, just so people understand, every used car, whether it be the type of used car you buy, or when a new car franchise trades a car, every car is a crapshoot. Nobody knows for sure what they're going to be able to sell it for, or what it's going to take to make it 100% to be able to go on the lot for sale. So every car you buy, every car that a new car dealership trades, is a crapshoot. You're hoping, worst case scenario, is you break even. You know, but there are cases where you're going to lose money. So if you have to dig out of a 100 car deficit over the next 5 months, that means you realistically need to be buying probably 20 extra cars every month. Some are going to end up sitting longer than you would like, and some could very well turn into that crapshoot where at the end you're just hoping you're going to be able to break even. It's you're in a tough spot. I don't know how to say it. Well, I just said it. You're in a tough spot. Yeah.
So I got a question for you. Throughout your years of running dealerships, did you guys ever have an era where you dealt with production? I know not on the level that we've dealt with over the last 5 years, but did you ever deal with a decrease in production that really hurt what you were doing at your dealership?
Absolutely. In the early 80s, you know, I was running a Nissan dealership, Admiral Nissan, in Pleasantville, New Jersey at that time. And in the early 80s, the country wasn't really pleased with the number of Japanese imported cars that were coming into the country. So suddenly there were quotas put on as to how many could be brought in. And there just weren't a lot of cars. I mean, literally, allocations were like next to nothing. I remember that Nissan figured out cars that were going to Guam and other U.S. Controlled areas, so that they would ship extra cars to Guam, which somehow made their way to the United States, and active Nissan dealers were able to buy those cars. I also remember at one time where there were so few Nissans that we found a Mazda dealer, I think it was in Montana, that was just, they couldn't sell the Mazdas to save their lives. And we were buying their new Mazdas and shipping them to our Nissan dealership and selling brand new Mazdas as used cars. And I remember there was a dealership, I think in the Buffalo area, Tunmore. I remember saying their slogan must be you get more with a ton more, but I wasn't sure. But we bought a lot of their inventory because they were having a tough time moving it. And I remember the owner I worked for bought a boatload of Nissans out of Puerto Rico, only to find out when they got to the Philadelphia area and they made it to the dealership that, well, they didn't have air conditioners and they didn't have heaters because, well, you didn't need a heater in Puerto Rico. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, there were some extra costs associated with those cars.
So what did that do with, I know what we experienced in the car market with me running my dealership is that the limited production coming out of these new car dealers and then the limited used cars that were in the system spike prices. So did Nissan prices spike during that time period when there was a reduction of production?
Well, you know, there were only so many vehicles available. If they were cars that we bought that there was added transportation because, you know, they were originally shipped to Guam and then they made their way to California and then however they got to, I'm sure Nissan from a corporate level helped facilitate all this. You know, not that they would ever admit it. But yeah, we had extra costs associated with these vehicles. And so, you know, we would have addendum labels, additional transportation, you know, whatever it was. And yeah, we couldn't be quite as, motivated when it came to price reductions as we might have been when we had plenty of cars. I remember like the base Sentra, whatever it was, and it might have just been called a B210 at that time. And you couldn't get them. And we had people that would leave us deposits. And my factory rep said, you're not going to get any. Stop taking deposits. Get in the used car business because you're not going to be in the new car business. And that was coming directly from my Nissan factory rep.
And what's interesting about that is, well, then you weren't able to get the car, so you had to become a glorified used car dealer.
Yes.
Now we're seeing a lot with these car manufacturers that don't have a lot of margin in their new product. I got a Nissan dealer buddy who he's doing this. I see a lot of these Jeep dealers, their whole front line is used vehicles. They got more used vehicles than they have new Jeeps and Rams. Mm-hmm. And then you're seeing Volkswagen do the same thing. All these distressed manufacturers who are having to incentivize the crap out of these cars to actually get people in them. There's no frontline money on a lot of these new cars. So they're all becoming what I'm seeing as glorified used car dealers. What is the mindset through these sales managers, these GMs right now, when they're doing that and saying, hey, I would rather sell you a used car than one of these new Jeeps sitting out here, cause I'm just not making any money on those.
Well, the sad reality is that pretty much everybody at a dealership on the sales side of things gets paid off a gross profit. Well, if there's no gross profit on the new car side, you better believe that most salespeople and sales managers, maybe not the new car manager, but most sales managers are dead set on pushing somebody into a pre-owned car where they can make some money, where there's going to be some profit to be had. At probably a lot of these Jeeps are selling for a couple $100 over cost. A lot of the Nissans could be selling for a couple hundred, maybe a couple hundred under cost. So, it gets to the point sometimes where when you're selling new cars that aren't making any money, it is as if as a manager, you have paid the owner to work in the dealership that day because the cars you sold were losers and they were taking away from your month-end gross profit total. So I remember when we sold the Acura SLX, which was a rebadged Isuzu Trooper, and literally we lost $5,000 to sell it. And that was a day where literally I paid the dealership so that I could work there and represent the store, because that was money that just came out of the bottom line that I was going to get paid off of. And so when managers are, and salespeople are confronted with that, yeah, they look to push the customer into, here, let me show you this low mileage 2-year-old one. I think it's probably a better value for you. We've got all the maintenance records, and it's equipped the way you want your car to be equipped. And you know, when you say yes, I'm going to be able to make some money on it. Okay, so maybe you leave that part out. But the point is that when your commission is based off of gross profit, you're going to gravitate towards the vehicles that will allow you to make gross profit as opposed to the ones that won't.
That's interesting you say that. That transitions us perfectly into this story right here. Mazda, who is actually pulling down their production of the lower margin, yes, which in these manufacturers speak is the cheaper cars for, yes, you as a consumer, and shifting production into the bigger, more profitable vehicles, higher margin. And this is all due to the money that it's going to cost them more of because of tariffs to actually produce. So they're going to try to make more money per vehicle than they are going to. And this is something that we've seen over the last 3 years. And now it's even going to get worse because the more money it's going to cost these manufacturers to get vehicles actually delivered to the dealerships, the more they're going to need to make per unit, because that means prices go up. Prices go up, you're going to sell less. That's just easy math.
That and the sad reality is, it gives the American consumer less choices of vehicles that might have been affordable for them. So if we're going to see manufacturers like Mazda cut production of the Mazda 3 and the Mazda CX-30, which are their two least expensive vehicles primarily that they sell, so that they can try to shift sales to the CX-50, the CX-70, the CX-90, that means that as a consumer, I have less options available to me that might fit in to my monthly budget. So it's going to make it harder for people to be able to get a new car. So I would think at some point it bodes well for the used car side of things, so that when you have somebody that's interested in a Mazda 3 or a CX-30, and you can't get them a new one because there's so few being brought in or being built anymore, that you instantly show them that 1-year-old or 2-year-old version that's well-equipped and, hell, it's going to be cheaper than that brand new one would have been. And meanwhile, you can make some money selling it. And I get why Mazda is doing what they're doing. They need to sell the higher profit margin vehicles to the dealers to help them cover the costs of what the tariffs are going to be. And their hope, having read that article, by the way, their hope is that somehow they'll be able to figure out a way to eat 60% of the additional tariff costs. And I guess that means only pass 40% on. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, they're just going to keep wholesaling these more expensive vehicles to their dealers, so it can impact the manufacturer's profit margin, so it can help offset the extra cost of the tariffs that they have to bear.
We can bring this full circle. Let me show you my lot again. This is what it looks like right now. So with Mazda, Honda, Toyota, Nissan, with all of them having to do this, go for higher margin products, it's going to greatly push a lot of these consumers that can't afford these high margin products into newer used cars.
Yes.
That takes the mid-tier stuff, and those dealers that were buying the upper-tier stuff, well, the franchise dealers are going to buy those and the used cars and then become glorified used car dealers, just like we were talking about. the upper range used car dealers now going to mid-range stuff. That stuff gets more expensive. That mid-range dealer then goes to my stuff. So then my stuff gets a lot more expensive. So what we have is we have this. And then I'm not going to ever be able to buy cars ever again. I'm going to go out of business. I'm going to become homeless. My wife's going to leave me. My dog will probably die. And I don't know. I'll make a homeless YouTube channel. That's what we'll do next.
You can show, you know, how comfortable life can be inside a Tesla S. Assuming you can charge it and have electricity.
Where am I going to charge? There's no charging station under the bridge, Ray.
well, maybe that's where we need to put them. I don't know. It is when you think about it, it is a dire kind of future for you and the car business, because way too much stuff is becoming way too expensive, which is only going to make the stuff that used to be cheap even more expensive than it had been. And, you know, I've talked about an affordability crisis in the automobile industry for the last 4 or 5 years. And I know people are sick of tariffs and they don't want to hear it. But with the advent of tariffs, it's only going to make it worse, whether it be new car or used car. And these could be some of the unintended consequences of tariffs, where everything just becomes too expensive for the American consumer. I'm going to share a little something with you. I buy my coffee from a company called Java Taza. I just love their coffee. I get their hazelnut cream and their chocolate raspberry, and I buy it in 5-pound bags already ground. And yesterday I needed to reorder my coffee. And so I pulled up my order history, and the last time I ordered it, it was $55 per 10-pound bag. Yesterday when I ordered it, it was $65.95 per 10-pound bag. So, tariffs impact everything, okay? Yep. The cost of my drinking my giant-ass cup of coffee every day just went up by, 20%? Approximately?
Yep.
Okay, what else is going up 20% or 5% or 10% or whatever percent it is? And we know that the cost of getting into an automobile has gone up, and we know the cost to finance that automobile has gone up, and we know the cost to insure that automobile has gone up, and you said earlier in the program the cost to repair those vehicles has gone up. That's, you know, we are rapidly approaching, I think, a crisis level for consumers in this country. Rents have gone up. You're going to be living under the bridge in a Tesla.
Rent free
in a Tesla that won't start because you've got nowhere to charge it.
Well, the problem is, if it doesn't have power, I'm not going to be able to open it either. So, yeah.
Well, I didn't start this show hoping that I could paint such a bleak future for you, but I do hope it improves after this.
And somebody said in the comments that, when my wife leaves me, you know, she's going to take the dog. So, all right. Well, on that happy note, I think we're going to go ahead in here. Hey, Ray, this is great. Thank you guys for being here. Subscribe, like, do all the things. And Ray, I will not see you next week because you're going to be out.
I will. I'll be on a train from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. next Tuesday afternoon. So I apologize. And I will be in D.C. for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and coming back on Saturday. And hopefully when I return on Saturday, the new sliding glass doors for my condo are installed and working well. I'll find out.
Well, let's hope so, because it's not long till it's going to get cold outside.
I know.
All right, Ray. I'll see you later, buddy.
Yep. Thanks, Brandon.